Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to another Britflix.com podcast. My name's Stuart Wright, and today's guest is Andy Compton. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Indeed it is. Before we get into any details about what we're going to talk about, which is five great tips to make the industry notice you, do you want to give the audience a little bit of a background as to who you are and what you're up to?
Sure, yeah. Again, Andy Compton. I'm just a guy in Midwest America. I'm in St. Louis, Missouri. Not the traditional Hollywood screenwriting origin story, but yeah, I'm a writer and director. I've done a couple short films, no features. I'm kind of just getting my first taste of breaking into the industry. I got a manager in December of 2021.
Well
for
done.
The first time. Thank you. So yeah, I'm now represented and kind of entering into the industry. I do also host a podcast. I'm only 10 episodes in, but it's called the Social Screenwriters Podcast. You can find more about it at Social Writer Pod on Twitter and Instagram. But basically, I just interview other writers that I met on Twitter, and we talk about who they are and what their process is and their thoughts on the industry and breaking in and people of various levels, but a lot of them, people just like me, just trying to get their first shot.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's about it. I also made a short film that's coming to festivals this year. You can find out more about it at Ethan Edna Movie. It's Ethan and Edna is the name of it. It's a short drama. It's going to play in a few festivals, hopefully.
So you've got no announcements yet then? You're still waiting on festival feedback?
Yeah, we just started submitting last month, okay. And usually it's like, you know, 5-6 months before you even hear anything. That the selection process starts so early in the year, in the spring, and then around August to September is usually when a lot of these festivals announce. So yeah, I'm playing the waiting game for now. There is a smaller festival that's close to my heart, though, the St. Louis Filmmaker Showcase.
Yes.
Which is a local thing for my community and our filmmaking community here. And that will be, I think selections are being announced in June, and it'll take place in late July. And I really hope we get to be a part of it. My last film, Tin Box, we were a part of it, and it was a joy, although it was all online. Because of the pandemic.
Of course.
Our film was finished in February of 2020, and then the pandemic hit, and our entire festival run was all exclusively online, which it was what it was, but we had a great experience, and I really hope this year I get to go kind of watch people watch my film in our
No,
film,
no, you're
in, in a live audience.
Your tale is not an uncommon one, and I think one of the things that a lot of people in the film industry at all levels, and I think this is it's almost like a universal truth. It's like whether or not you're trying to get your short into a local film festival or you're hoping to get a feature in a competition in Cannes, there is a huge difference between that happening and that happening and you being in a room with an audience watching your film.
Yes.
And I've interviewed people across the spectrum on that one. And it is really interesting that we took it for granted, like a lot of things we took for granted with the freedom of movement pre-pandemic.
Yeah, for sure.
That was an important part of the process. And you kind of, it's only when you start stripping away the elements you're not allowed to do because of what the pandemic has imposed on us, that you realize, oh yeah, that was an important ingredient as to, I mean, as a filmmaker, your own understanding of how your film works is if you can see it with an audience, that's your best test of anything.
Yes, 100%. And I was lucky for Tin Box that I was still in film school and we got to show this film to like 3 different classes and get feedback and all these things. And then I tightened up the edit, you know, based on that feedback. We even did a couple reshoots because of feedback that we got in those classes. So
brilliant.
That was an advantage for that film. But then this was my first post-film school film that I made on my own. Outside of film school, I didn't make it on my own. Had a lot of help. But I'm curious to see how this one goes. The early feedback has been good just from the cast and crew and then a few peers that I've let see the film. But now it's kind of on lockdown and we're just waiting to see what festivals think. So fingers crossed.
Indeed. Well, yeah, fingers crossed from Britflix 2.
Oh, thank you.
Very best of luck. So we're going to move into the main body of the conversation. And I think 5 Great Tips to Make the Industry Notice You is a really great title. Especially given, as you've already pointed out, you might be American, but you're not Hollywood based. So for a lot of my listeners, they won't be in America, but I think it'll resonate beyond just being American. The idea of trying to establish yourself outside of the Hollywood bubble and lessons learned there. So we're going to, and just for the benefit of the audience now, who may not have heard this before, the format is simple. It's 5 times 5. So 5 headings by 5 minutes, and at the end of each 5 minutes, an alarm will go off, and in this case, it's a dog barking, and that will draw us to close on the first item on Andy's agenda, and we'll finish that up, and then we'll move on to the next one. Does that make sense to you, Andy?
Yes, it does. Yeah, I follow that. So we're in good shape so far.
Cool. Item number 1 on the 5 Great Tips to Make the Industry Notice You is, you've headed, Breaking In from Outside Hollywood. Do you want to sort of unpack that for us and see where we go?
Yeah, sure. So like I said, I'm in Missouri, which is like the polar opposite of, not literally, but figuratively, the polar opposite of Hollywood. I'm in the Midwest in kind of a working class way of life, you know, and telling people that you want to be a filmmaker around these parts is, you kind of get some weird looks, you know, like, oh, really? That's, you know, shouldn't you be anywhere else than Missouri? Yeah. So it's been an interesting journey, but I went to film school here. I went to film school late. I was kind of a knucklehead as a kid. I was a high school dropout. Spent many years just kind of working regular jobs, warehouses, restaurants, things like that, and partying a lot, you know, kind of getting into trouble. And then around 26, I got sober for the first time, and started at a community college in my town, and just didn't know what I was going to do. I had no film aspirations, no screenwriting aspirations, never knew that this was going to be my path whatsoever. Wow. And then went through community college and I started kind of messing with screenwriting. This is 2016, 2017. And then in 2018, it was time to transfer to university. I did that. And I went to a film school and entered a screenwriting program. And that's kind of what got me on this journey. And then upon graduating that, it was early 2020 pandemic graduation, May 2020.
Yeah.
Everyone's on lockdown anyway. So I'm kind of trying to use that to my advantage. The fact that the entire industry was operating on Zoom for the first time. No one really knew what Zoom was yet.
Yeah.
But Hollywood had a massive shift to Zoom. And because of that, you know, I was able to like get my first ever manager general with someone over Zoom. And that was in December of 2020. And although I wasn't represented, it was my first experience of talking to an actual player in the industry. So then I just kept going, grinding. I'm entering contests, which we'll get into in a little bit. Doing everything I can from Missouri, so far from Hollywood.
So what are you actually, when you're saying you're doing something, what are you actually doing to try and break in? What's actually going on? How are you getting noticed so you can have Zoom calls with people?
Sure. Mostly screenwriting competitions. The way that I got that meeting is actually kind of funny because people say, you know, entering contests can be a waste of money. And if you're not winning, then nothing really happens for you, which I found to be true and not true, because the way I got my first manager meeting was I randomly got an email from a professional writer who I don't know if they would want me to share their name or not, so I won't right now. But nice guy I had never met before, never, you know, nothing. And he said, hey, I was a first round reader in the Launchpad screenwriting competition earlier this year. Mm-hmm. And I read your script Suplex, which is a feature I wrote. It's about a young man, teenager from an abusive home who wants to find a way out of his small town and his abusive home through a very violent backyard wrestling league that he enters into and tries to climb the ranks in. And it's, you know, it's a very indie drama kind of movie, but he read the screenplay and he thought it was really good and he moved it on to the next round. Now in that competition, I was only a quarter finalist, didn't get any further. So you would think that's not really a win. But then when the contest concluded, he was allowed to email me because he couldn't while it was still active, contractually. But yeah, he was like, hey, I read your script. I really liked it. I think you're talented. Is there anything I can do just to like help you? I just want to reach out and see if I can give you a helping hand. So I tell him, you know, yeah, I'm kind of a nobody in Missouri. I wrote that in film school. I don't have management. I've never talked to a manager. I've never talked to an agent. I've never talked to a real producer. And he's like, okay, so I'm going to try to figure something out. And he got me a meeting with a manager at a pretty well-known management company. And it went well. It was a cool meeting, and I'm super grateful that it happened. But yeah, that's one of the ways. Entering contests was one of the ways. Putting my stuff up on Coverfly and on Stage 32, even though I didn't use that much. I was finding every single online avenue that I possibly could to get myself noticed. Also, Twitter. I had a Twitter account since 2009, and it was dormant for about 11 years. I'd pop in once every few years to try to mess with it. However, I just felt like I was talking to a brick wall. And then when the pandemic started, I found the screenwriting corner of Twitter and started just kind of meeting people and following other screenwriters and interacting with them. And then kind of gearing my stupid sense of humor towards screenwriting. And I started just kind of growing a little bit of a network. And the Twitter side, I can't stress enough how much Twitter has helped me. As a screenwriter in middle America, not on the coasts, really getting noticed. I could, you know, maybe later there's an opportunity to dive more into how Twitter has helped me, but,
No. I think that's really sound advice, and I think it's sort of, you know, to sort of sum it up, it's like it's be bold about what you can do with the avenues that are available to you to get noticed, and that
100%. Yes.
Yeah, and just for geography's sake, and for people that don't know where Missouri is in comparison to New York and LA, because they know most of my listenership is going to know where those two places are. How far are you from LA?
It is the exact middle between New York and LA.
Really?
The Midwest. It's St. Louis is like pretty much, I'm pretty sure that if you went mileage inward from New York and LA, we might be the dead center.
So if I drove from New York, I'd go via St. Louis, would I? Would that be a route to go?
I would imagine so, yeah. I would imagine it would be, honestly. Yeah, you would pass right through, right under the arch is a big landmark that we have here in St. Louis. You drive right under it. It's called the Gateway to the West, as a matter of fact.
Brilliant. Well, look, you've already started talking about this, but your next heading is navigating screenwriting competitions. You want to sort of unpack that for the listener?
Absolutely. So in the summer of 2019, I finished Suplex, which was my first feature. And I started, I had no idea if it was good or not. And in its earliest stage, it wasn't great. I didn't understand formatting very well. I didn't understand a lot of things, but I think what that script had was a lot of heart. I entered it immediately into a screencraft competition, screencraft drama. And in 2019, I got my result back. I made the quarterfinals, and it gives you like a rating out of 10. And my first score I ever got was a 9.6 out of 10.
Blimey.
And I was like, oh my God, I am the next great American screenwriter. That's what's happening. Like, it totally gave me a big head. And I couldn't believe it. And then in the next round, I ended up not making the semifinals, and I got like a 5.1 out of 10, I think, or something, just totally a complete knockdown. And that was my very first experience with the subjectivity of screenwriting competitions. Yeah, is that,
tell me about it. That's amazing difference.
Yeah, it's all in the reader that you get. And I've experienced nothing but varying levels of that all through my time. I think I spent 2.5 years entering screenwriting competitions. And but yeah, I was really grinding at that, as many, many screenwriters do before they get noticed. There's a huge contest competition kind of environment on Twitter. People talking about competitions, posting their results, all these things. And it is good for exposure. I will preface this with, I entered probably, I don't know, 25 to 30 competitions over my time. And they're like $70 a pop.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not cheap, is it?
No, it's not. And I was lucky to have the money when I was doing this to be entering these things and trying to get my chances. And I'd place in the semifinals, the quarterfinals. I was never a finalist for a long time. And then that all changed in the summer of 2021. I had two of my features, Suplex and Bellyache, which Bellyache is the one that's kind of doing more for me right now. It's about an alcoholic lunch lady in Missouri who is fired from her job at an elementary school cafeteria for giving a less fortunate student free meals.
Okay.
Because he couldn't afford it. And then her journalist daughter, who she's been estranged from for many years, writes a story about it, and it kind of brings them back together. And the story goes viral, and they become this internet sensation. And with that, all of the skeletons in the lunch lady's closet start to come out of the closet.
Interesting.
That she was not a great mother. And, you know, her and her daughter have this really strained relationship. But anyway, that was the other feature. And those two placed in the Nickel Fellowship, which is kind of regarded as the cream of the crop competition. Well, it's run by the Academy.
I was going to say, it's run by the Oscar Academy, isn't it? So that's the... So congratulations there.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. So, and they both were semifinalists, and in fact, Suplex made it to the top 50. And that was just a massive career boost for me. I had people on Twitter, managers and stuff, DMing me like, hey, can I read your script? I was getting random emails. Hey, can I read your script? And just a lot of peers who wanted to read it. And that was when everything changed for me. So it took 2.5 years of spending few thousand dollars US trying to just get exposure and get that feedback and figure out where I stack up in the industry. And with the Nickel, you know, I'm taking general meetings, I'm doing all these things. And then Roadmap Writers, Dorian Connolly, who was the co-founder of Roadmap Writers, you can find him on Twitter at Roadmap Writers, reached out to me and said, hey, I saw you placed in the Nickel and I kind of just like your Twitter presence. Could I read your script? She did. She passed it on to her her work partner, Joey Tuccio, and he liked it. He was like, hey, can I send this out for you? And then he sent it to Epicenter. Jared Murray, who is now my manager, read it at Epicenter, and we got a meeting. Things went well. And then 2 months later, they signed me. So it's like, you know, screenwriting competitions, people can have their opinion on them. I have my opinion that I probably spent a lot more money than I should have, but it was all part of my journey. And in the end, it actually did pay off.
Yeah.
If you want, I do have a, and this can go in or can be cut out, but like I have a list of the competitions that I find to be probably reputable and, non-predatory, because I do believe that it's a predatory industry. Well, look, I
mean, you've gone through this experience. If you've got an understanding of, and you, obviously it's not an endorsement as such, because you can't predict who's in charge of these competitions going forward.
Yes,
but as a person that's spent money as a consumer, what are the festivals, the screenwriting competitions you would recommend people spend their money on? If you've got
for sure. So yeah, it is a predatory industry, and you see a lot. Go on Film Freeway or even Coverfly and browse through their competitions, and you will see competitions that are just like, you know, the Hollywood Screenwriter Awards monthly and whatever, and it's $70 to enter, and it's like there's no success for their past winners. I would say the thing that you can do is go to a competition, see who the previous winners are in recent years, and Google them. See what's going on with their career. See if anything happened. Sometimes you can even DM them on Twitter and say, hey, did this end up doing anything for you?
Yeah.
But I would say the competitions that I think are the Nickel is first, the Nickel Fellowship. That's pretty well regarded. And then usually people would say Austin Film Festival is the second, which I would agree with. Friend. Yes, exactly. And then after that, it's kind of a mixed bunch, but I would say Screencraft does a lot of good things. I have a friend named Nabil Chowdhury who won their sci-fi competition in 2019.
Yeah.
And he has gone on to have a great career. He has like multiple projects at multiple like large studios, and Brilliant. He has a manager agent. He's doing it.
And he roots that success in the winning of that sci-fi competition.
Yes.
Brilliant.
Yes. Well, that was the initial seed.
Yeah.
That's good. Kind of kicked it all off. After that, you know, the Page Awards are pretty good. I would say the Launchpad competition does good things. Final Draft's Big Break. Script Pipeline, that you might know from Twitter, hashtag pipeline writers, that whole thing. I actually won their competition 7 days after getting a manager. Right, so it was kind of funny timing because I was chasing this dream of getting a manager by winning a screenwriting competition for 2.5 years. Excuse me. And then lo and behold, I get a manager and 7 days later, I finally won a competition. So it was just funny timing. But
nice and reassuring for your manager, though, right?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. They were, they picked someone who won a competition. So that was good. I only won a genre though. There was like, I think 4 or 5 winners in different genres.
You'd have to lower the praise there. You're okay. You won.
That's my default setting is to lower the praise. No. But yeah, anyway, that's my list. There might be a few that I missed, but again, just do your due diligence. Google past winners, Google the company in general, just see who's running this thing. Who are their judges? What do they offer if you are a finalist or you win is a huge thing. Some of these competitions, I wouldn't blame someone if there is a, you know, $2,000 cash prize and it's 60 to enter and you really think you could win, go for it. Why not? You know, it's no different than like playing a lottery ticket or anything like that.
Yeah.
But usually you want to make sure that they have reputable people on their panel, reputable people who are going to have meetings with you if you win. It's just, you know, it's something to look out for because there are people out there that this is just a
I think your message is clear, really. It's sort of, it's, you know, the bigger, the better the competition, the more public the knowledge is about how successful people have been, really.
And if it's 100%.
And if it's hard 100%. To find what anyone's ever done who's won it, there's a good sign that that's probably not doesn't mean it's irreputable. It just means it's not a thing that's going to help elevate your career. So if you're going to spend $60 to $80, then spend it on something that might give you more value. So then it becomes a strategy, then, doesn't it? And obviously the ones you've listed, and I'll put links in the show notes to all of them so people can check them out for themselves. I mean, Screencraft are very busy on Twitter. You know, Script Pipeline are so. You can start a conversation with them anyway if you really wanted to
before you spent
a dime.
I'd say especially Script Pipeline, they're very responsive and active in the screenwriting community. Another thing I'll add, if people don't know about Coverfly, it's kind of just a place where you can list your scripts, list your bio, who you are, and you can enter competitions through Coverfly, and they track your successes and give you a rating on your scripts. And that can be helpful. It's kind of hotly debated, to be completely transparent. Coverfly doesn't pay me. Script Pipeline doesn't pay me. All of these companies come with their pros and their cons, I'm sure. But Coverfly is a great service that a lot of people are into. Again, I'd urge people to get involved in screenwriting Twitter if you're not. You'll start to learn what other people are doing.
Find your feet yourself as well, I'd say. So next one on your list is finding your voice and building a brand.
Yeah. So this is something that is very daunting, I think, in the beginning, to figure out who you are as a writer. What is voice? You know, everyone talks about voice. Everyone talks about brand. And it's kind of hard in the beginning because you're just experimenting and you're writing in different genres, and who am I? I would say that your voice is the thing that is, it's definitely a calling card about you. Like, for instance, my voice, I've come to realize through people telling me what my voice is, yeah, from having peers read my scripts, but that, you know, it's, they can be funny, they can be kind of heartbreaking and tragic, usually revolving around, and this is a big part of my brand that my manager sells me on, is that I write about the working class, the American working class, the people often forgot about in our society, who are just working regular jobs. Because like I said earlier, that's who I am. That's what I come from. I was, you know, a restaurant server for 9 years. I've worked at Walmart. I've worked in various warehouse jobs, driving forklifts, you know, I've done quite a few different jobs.
I can tell you, as you know, as a consumer of American cinema in my formative years, I thought everybody lived in huge semi-detached houses and had two cars each, you know?
Oh, no. Yeah, no, that's a lie that they're selling you. Yeah. Yeah, it's, and that's a huge selling point. Why I even got represented was, my manager said that he was talking to people who also work at the company. It's a small company, but saying, do we have anyone on our roster who does what Andy does specifically? He writes about smaller worlds, working class characters. My manager comes from a working class family as well, in Alabama. So he was interested in amplifying that kind of voice and those kind of characters that we don't see that much in American cinema. And so that was a huge thing for me, but like, yeah, so your voice is, you know, what is it that makes it a, you know, whatever, whoever you are, what is it that makes it your script? I know people would say
out of interest. I mean, obviously that's a reflection of who you are and equal to you. I mean, in Britain, I come from a working class background too.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
That's a big focus for me in terms of trying. And certainly you think of Midwest versus showing New York or showing LA, you know, thinking in terms of outside of the coastal cities and stuff, equally thinking. I mean, admittedly, I now live in London, so that makes me a bit of a hypocrite now, but it's, but I don't, you know, I've not lost all memory of what it's like outside of London. And it's always interesting to try and talk about. But when you were starting out writing, were you conscious of this from the get-go? Or is it something you found? Because, I mean, obviously, this is about finding your voice. Did you start by trying to write Guardians of the Galaxy and then realize, I'm not going to ever write Guardians of the Galaxy, let's be honest with ourselves, and you started corralling yourself into this kind of blue-collar kind of ideas of drama?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. In the beginning, I kind of have always been writing small stories. Funny background about Suplex is in 2016, I was laying in bed one night and I had partaken, this was before I got sober. I had smoked a little bit of weed, a little bit of marijuana. I was chilling in my room. All the lights were off and I was just laying in bed with my laptop. And I wrote the first 4 pages of Suplex. I didn't know what I was doing. I thought it was going to be like a web series at the time. And I just started randomly writing. I wrote 4 pages of this thing. And closed the laptop and didn't open it again for 2 and almost 3 years when I was sitting in my first screenwriting class in college. And we had to write the first 30 pages of a feature. That was our assignment over the course of a semester. And I was like, what if I went back to that Suplex thing that I started 3 years ago, laying in bed one night, not thinking anything about it. But like, yeah, that was, I kind of think of that as my most like unfiltered writing voice, is that before I ever cared about the industry, before I cared about market viability or any of these things, I wanted to tell this tiny, tiny story about a kid wrestling in these tiny little backyard wrestling rings made from whatever they could find to construct these dangerous rings, and trying to basically beat his own cowardice. That's what the story is about. It's about a kid who knows that he's a little bit of a coward, and to get out of his toxic situation, he needs to get strong. And he does so by entering into this really dangerous, violent backyard wrestling. But it's a really small story. And Bellyache is also about a small town story. So I think that I never set out to tell these stories, but I was setting out to talk about what I know as a person in Missouri. I know regular working class people. That's where I come from. So it kind of happened organically, to answer your question. Now, there are some people from Missouri that might be writing the next Guardians of the Galaxy. Awesome. But the way my brain works, it's kind of just getting things out that that are closer to my experience. I don't write superhero stories. It's not saying I never would.
Yeah.
But if I were to write a superhero story, it would be some kind of weird suburban Missouri superhero or something kind of offbeat like that.
Yeah.
It would be my version of it.
I'll tell you mine when we finish recording.
Oh, okay. Awesome. Yeah, I'd love to hear it. But like, you know, also I've written horror, I've written sci-fi, I've written a few different things, but the things that are really like taking off for me are the dramas about working class characters.
Well, it must be comforting to know you can be yourself, as it were, to promote yourself as a writer. You know, that's a pretty good place to get to.
Yeah. I'm definitely not mad about where I'm at right now in my journey. It all feels very authentic to me, and I'm just glad that there seems to be some kind of audience for it.
The next tip is a very practical one, and I think one that I think more writers should explore, because you can teach yourself a lot without risking a lot in the process, is making your short film with whatever you have available to you.
Yes. I can't stress this enough. And I know on Twitter, there's like some people who are like, listen, if you have an iPhone, you can go make a movie. And while that is true, and it's a good exercise, I mean, you're probably not going to make a movie that can do much for you career-wise, which that's kind of the difference. And I get why that's a touchy subject on Twitter. But what I can say is that like, I had the good fortune of going to film school. I'm still in a lot of debt from it. But from going to film school, I got to have a network of peers who were also interested in filmmaking. They wanted to make films.
Yeah.
We had a media center at my school where we could check out cameras and lights and all these different things, so long as we were currently students and paying a tuition.
Got you.
So I had all the resources I needed to make my first couple films. And the first one I made was complete dog shit. I don't know if I could swear on this. I'm sorry.
You've already done it. Go on, crack on. You're okay.
My very first film was not great. Second one was better. It was an improvement. And we actually got into some festivals. We even won Best Horror at the Chicago Southland International Film Festival.
Congratulations.
Which was a really awesome experience. But yeah, and then the latest one was my first one on my own. So all we did was, we have a cheap camera. A lot of people shoot on, you know, Arri Alexas and Reds and things like that. We had a Z Cam, which is kind of like the equivalent to what I own, is a Blackmagic Pocket 6K cinema camera, which was about $2,500.
Got you.
It's definitely pricey, but it's not, you know, cinema camera making Hollywood films pricey. And we had a set of cheap Rokinon Cine DS lenses. We had four lenses. And we had, you know, lights that we were able to check out from the school, because I had a friend who still went to Webster come work on the film, who helped us out. You know, they got some gear for us. So I'm in a privileged position that I made this network in film school. And I would encourage people, you know, when we talk about go out and make your film with what you got, a lot of that is, you know, go out and network with filmmakers in your community. Find people who live around you who are interested in doing this stuff too. And then pool your resources, you know, and hey, I have a set of lights, you have a camera, you know, my other friend has lenses. Let's all get together, make my movie, make your movie, make their movie.
I guess for someone that's not done it at all ever, then I guess the starting point, because it would seem scary to go, I want to make a film, is make yourself available to be a resource on somebody else's show and get to know people sort of from within, as opposed to, because trying to recruit people who you're not going to pay in most instances is fraught with people who aren't going to turn up and whatever. Whereas if you've put yourself in the middle of something and say, look, I'd like to lend my resources to your film, then that's the best way to get to know anybody and for them to get to know you. Because the minute they see that you're enthusiastic and competent and reliable, etc., then when you turn around and say, hey, I've got a film I want to make, they might, they're going to be more receptive to that because they go, hey, that's not a stranger.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the same goes for the screenwriting community too, in that, like, you know, I need notes on my new script. Perhaps I can reach out to this person that I'm friendly with and ask if they have a new script that I could give them feedback on, and we can do a swap. And then we're meeting in the middle. I'm not just hitting someone up and being like, hey, will you take 2-3 hours out of your day, read my script, give me detailed feedback and send it back, because that's what I need. Then you're meeting people in the middle, and you know, you're not only giving each, it's not only a mutual benefit, but you're also making a friend, you're building on a friendship. And the same goes for filmmaking, really. Like, meet people, you know, some people make movies alone, but very, very rarely. You got to get out there. You got to meet people in your community, be willing to share your resources, share your time and effort, share your thoughts. And hopefully if you build a healthy network, then you're going to get the same in return. And that's how movies get made, at a very, very small level. And like you said, people aren't being paid. So, you know, there's usually a certain amount of passion in these people that are willing to come out for free. And it's doing favors for each other and knowing that they'll be repaid if you need something someday. On my next film that we're trying to shoot later this summer, we're going to run a big Kickstarter for the first time. We did a small one last time just to kind of pay for meals and things like that for people. But this time we're going to try to raise quite a few thousand, because we're going to pay people for the first time. Because I'm really, like, as a creator who's made a few films now, I'm really tired of asking for favors from people. And I just feel like I'm at a point now where my new film, Ethan and Edna, hopefully through festival success, if we have any, hopefully, you know, through festival success, and not just that, but just people liking the movie, we can build a budget, because people will believe in us a little more and our dream that we can really make a good film. And hopefully we can raise enough money that we can pay crew and cast for the first time. I don't plan on taking any money because it's my passion project. But like, for others, you know, there comes a certain point too where you build all these things from the ground up. You know, when you start your first screenplay, it's probably not going to be the one that breaks you into the industry. Yeah. The odds just are that it's not. You continue to learn, you continue to grow a network. And then before you know it, you're in a position where you have a manager and you have a network of peers, and you know, you're really doing it. And I think the same goes for filmmaking. Start small, start with what you have, meet new people, and, you know, grow from there.
Yeah, because obviously, from what you're saying, it's all a very iterative process. Nobody arrives fully formed. You know, all the best filmmakers that we've ever heard of started off holding a boom mic for someone, or going to get sandwiches for somebody. You know, you know, there obviously are exceptions from very privileged backgrounds that just got jumped, you know, that went from, you know, from zero to directing a movie that cost $2 million or whatever it might be. And they're very lucky, but they are few and far between, and you can be bitter and triste about it. But most people, that enthusiasm you're talking about, you know, if you look at somebody who's like one of the most successful filmmakers ever, Steven Spielberg, he was making films in his backyard when he was, 8 years old or something, you know? And it's no coincidence that when you read those stories about people, that they become successful filmmakers. That's not to say that everybody that gets a Super 8 camera when they're 8 years old is going to become Steven Spielberg, but everything starts with the first thing you do. You're not ready to make Nomadland, or you're not ready to make Logan just because you want to make a movie and you've seen one.
Yeah. I have to tell this really quick story now because you said Nomadland. One of the managers that I met with on the way who didn't want to sign me, and it was a good thing that they didn't, but one of the things that they told me that really turned me off was, you need to quit making short films. You need to go make your feature. Get the money however you can and go make your feature. And if you put your feature up and it isn't, you put it right next to a TV that's playing Nomadland, and if your film doesn't look like that, you need to just trash it and just go start over. And I was like, the best picture winner, Nomadland? Like, yeah. Is that what we're talking about? And it was just kind of like a funny bar because, like you said, you know, you don't come out of the gate making Nomadland. It just doesn't happen. It's a long way. I believe Chloe Zhao, right?
Yeah.
Nomadland. She had made previous films. Probably quite a few short films, but I know that she made at least one feature.
Yeah, The Rider.
For that. Just kind of hilarious advice. People are going to give you bad advice. I would say that's bad advice. It's a marathon, not a sprint. You know, go out there, make your movies, accept the flaws that they have, learn from them. I know for me with Tin Box, I made a movie that was a little bit cool. With Ethan and Edna, all I wanted to do was make a movie that I thought in my mind was a little bit better than Tin Box. And I think we succeeded with that. And that's what I want to do on my next movie, is be a little bit better than Ethan and Edna. And it's a growth.
And that's actually very good advice. I mean, it's advice I try and give to a lot of people. I've mentored a couple of people, and there's always that worry that they've not woken up Quentin Tarantino, or they've not woken up Lynn Ramsey, you know, because they go, that's my favorite filmmaker. And right. I always say to them, you know, the only thing you can ever measure against is how bad you were before and how much better you are now, because that's the bit you control. Trying to be as good as Lynn Ramsey is a bit like me trying to say I'm going to be as good a cook as bloody Gordon Ramsay, you know? It's never going to be something I can really measure. So the one thing you can control is that you work, you develop by working, and therefore you can see when you put two scripts side by side, when they're 2 years between them, that one is markedly better than the other one. And that's the measure that you want to be able to show yourself to keep you going, I suppose.
And who knows, maybe in 10 or 15 years, you are cooking like Gordon Ramsay, or you are...
I already am, like, but I don't want to brag, you know? I don't want to brag.
Oh, okay. Oh, totally. Yeah, the humble rap.
The final thing on your five, and I think you've touched on this a bit, but I think you might want to expand it more, is writing with a personal connection to the material.
Yes, yeah. So, I mean, I kind of talked about the log lines of the two features that helped me break in.
Yeah.
Suplex and Bellyache. Suplex is about a cowardly kid who knows he needs to take the next step in his life to get out of a toxic situation. So he enters a violent backyard wrestling league. That whole script is a metaphor for me, the way I wrote it, of me being 26 years old, coming from a partying background. I was a high school dropout. I didn't even have a GED, a high school equivalent, until I was 25. So I went many years with no high school education, and I had really low self-esteem about that. And, I got sober for the first time. I ended up relapsing, but now I'm sober again. But But I started community college, I got my GED, and then I started community college, and it was a very scary thing because I felt like, you know, I went many years without a high school education and having very low self-esteem about that, about my level of education and my ability to even be a student. But I did it. I thrust myself into this world that I was terrified of. And then I ended up being a college graduate and having like pretty good grades, and things went okay from a lot of hard work. But, that's what Suplex is really about. It's about someone being kind of scared of taking the next step, but doing it anyway. And it's told through this crazy backyard wrestling story. Bellyache is personal to me. My mom worked in an elementary school cafeteria. She was a lunch lady, and they had a policy at her school where if a student can't afford their lunch, if there's, you know, if they're in the negative in their account, then they get a cheese sandwich, which is just two pieces of bread and a slice of cheese in the middle, while all the other kids who have money are able to eat whatever the special of the day is. And my mom had to take away a hot tray from like 7 and 8 year old children because they didn't have enough money. And that's like, it's not their fault at all. It's their parents not giving them money, or their parents just being broke. That happens. Some people are poor.
Yeah.
And yeah, the American public school system thinks that children should have to pay for that when our public schools are funded by taxes. As me, a taxpaying citizen, I'm like, I will pay a little bit more if that's the difference, is that kids don't have to suffer in public schools.
Yeah, yeah.
Because even outside of the hunger side of it, the psychological aspect of it too, you know, poor kids get bullied. That's just the truth. Kids who are different, and we're singling out these kids for a thing that's no fault of their own. That's a lot of what Bellyache was about. My mom told me these stories, and it was so heartbreaking for her that she ended up not working at that school anymore because they were making her do this thing that, as a mother, completely contradicts who she is in her core, of taking food away from a child. So that always stuck with me so much that when it came time to write my senior thesis feature in film school, I chose that to be the subject matter. And then from that, Bellyache grew from that. And lo and behold, it ended up being the script that's done the most for me, because I think a lot of people hear about this thing that's going on in American public schools, and it's like, why are we not talking about this? Yeah. This is a very real thing, and it's told through like a darkly comedic sense. But there is a lot of drama in there and a lot of realness to it as well. So writing with a personal connection, I would just say, is like, what is on your mind? What do you think of I'm a strongly opinionated person. I think that a lot of writers really should be, because it means that you have something to say. So it's like, what in your core of who you are as a person and the way that you view the world, what is the thing that keeps you up at night? What is a thing that you could talk about so passionately because it bothers you, it excites you, a number of other emotions that you could feel from any one thing? You can write a ghost story, or you can write a zombie movie or whatever, but what is the theme going on in there? You know, what are we trying to...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've done it in genre myself. I mean, I did one, you know,
yeah,
a woman who cares for the elderly and as a part-time job working as a courier is the lead in a folk horror that I've written, you know? So that character is doing a real human problem, but against that, then there's a backdrop of this other supernatural thing, which... makes it a genre piece, but the character is still from something that's real in that relates to how I see the world, you know, and how the world. I mean, what you're talking about from your point of view, I always think of it happens more. It seems to get covered more in American TV. It's like the idea of the American dream turned nightmare for too many people. You know, that the dream just isn't even a thought you could have, because every week is a living nightmare. Because of, if you're that kid getting the cheese sandwich where all your friends are getting burgers and fries, you know, you're not living any American dream, and you can't see that you're part of it, you know? And I think that that's something that I think is an important story to try to tell. I think it's great that you're able to do that with it. And to answer you, listening to your talk throughout this whole thing, you've identified, obviously, you dropped out of school, you partied, and then you've seen the light in some way, shape or form that's got you to this place.
Mm-hmm.
But it does sound like you've lived a life as well. You know, there's an element to what you're talking about, which isn't about anything to do with film. It's about being a human being, and the fact that you've had knocks and you've had successes, and you know which one you prefer, but you know what to do when you get a knock.
Yeah, that's kind of the funny thing about it, isn't it? That I think that there are so many people in the world who film isn't even on their radar, but because of their life experience, they have the potential to be an amazing storyteller
or
an amazing filmmaker if they were just given the education and the tools on how to do it, because their experience is just so unique. And there's tremendous stories around the world. Human beings are inherently interesting. Every single one of us have a story that is inherently interesting. And I would say, what is the thing about you? You might think, oh, well, I come from a very normal town and a very normal family, and I'm just a normal person. There's nothing... Dig deep, you know, what is the weird thing that your cousin got arrested for? You know, what is the religious event that you were made to attend that you didn't really know how much you were in love with that, and you had to make a decision later in life on your own? Like, there's just, you know, anything, anything. Yeah. But, also, but it's but, all about...
But I was going to say, but also the way you were talking there about your mother told you stories and they stuck with you, but it wasn't until you started going through your film education that you had somewhere to release these stories. You know, they were just between you and your mother, but then you've they're obviously very dear to you for obvious reasons, but then actually they then become a resource well for you to explore with your writing, which I think is really exciting. Now,
External stories from other people. Yeah, totally.
Well, we've done our five now, sir, and I'm very grateful for that. I'm just going to run through the list of what we just covered. So in the last 25 minutes or so, we have talked breaking in from outside Hollywood, which I think, you know, your trajectory currently sits, your living proof that it's possible to not be invisible when you're not in Hollywood. Navigating screenwriting competitions. I think the fact that you could talk to a lived experience and the festivals you've dealt with directly and continue to have dialogue with, I thought was really, really sort of sound. As we caveat it all, that's your experience. Other people may have bad experiences, and that doesn't contradict that. Because obviously a subjective read is a subjective read, you know.
Yes.
If you'd have got your 5 and 10 the other way around, you wouldn't have got to the 10, would you? I mean, your 9 point, whatever it was, and your 5, you wouldn't have got to the 9 if you hadn't got the nine first, you know.
And there's people out there whose first script is a finalist in the Nickel Fellowship, you know. It's just, you never know.
Yeah. Finding your voice and building a brand, making your short with whatever you've got available to you, and then, as we just talked about, writing with the personal connections and material. You've mentioned it a couple of times, but let's remind people, what's the short film that you've got currently in circulation then that's looking to get into festivals? What's that called?
Yes, it's called Ethan and Edna. It's a short dramedy film made here in St. Louis with a small crew of people I went to film school with and a small cast of local actors. Stars Larry Clauden, who's a good friend of mine, and Donna Weinsting, who is an amazing actress that we found through auditions. It's going to be in circulation in the festival circuit this year, hopefully, with any luck. We've submitted to, I think, 10 festivals now. Some that are pretty prominent. We really took huge swings this year, and I'm totally waiting for the rejection letters to come in. But should we get selected by one of those, it'd be pretty awesome. But I have high hopes. And also, you know, if we don't get into any festivals, it's not going to stop me.
And then finally, yes, you're the host for podcast. Tell us about the podcast again.
Yes. So a relatively new venture. It's called the Social Screenwriters Podcast. You can find more about it on Twitter and Instagram at Social Writer Pod. I just interview people that I've met on Twitter, writers, screenwriters, and we talk about who they are. We talk about their writing process, how they attack writing, what their experience has been like so far trying to break into the industry. And I'm actually entering a new stage where I'm broadening that a little bit and maybe bringing a few managers that I know on and things like that. But it's basically a podcast where I really just try to be a positive resource for screenwriters, aspiring, especially like trying to get into the industry. Yeah, I just want it to be like a positive thing. I'm having a lot of fun just meeting people and learning their experiences. And
I will waffle on about this forever. So what I will do right now is say thank you very much for giving your time on the BritFlix podcast.
Of course, yeah, it was an absolute pleasure, man. I just hope I did a good job.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.